In this episode of Movie Wallahs, we're going to review the movie Stoker and the incredible Burt Wonderstone. It's time for Movie Wallahs. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Wallahs is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, the show is for you. Greetings all.
Hello.
Hello. Happy Monday evening.
Yes.
Happy post St. Patrick's Day.
The day after St. Paddy's Day is when we're recording, yes. Well, look, that's not actually going to tie into when people hear this.
Correct.
Such is Movie Wallahs, we time shift.
Yes, your green beer will have long left your body by the time you're
hopefully.
Hearing
this.
And the new Pope will be inaugurated.
Yes.
I don't know why that was relevant. I just felt like throwing it in.
When is the new Pope inaugurated?
Midnight tonight.
Yeah, 3 o'clock Eastern time, which is really weird. They reported the time as 3 o'clock Eastern time on a California news show. So why would they make you do that math? I don't know. And that means midnight our time, which means nobody on the West Coast is going to watch this, except the most devout Catholics.
You have midnight mass.
Yeah.
Yes, but that's on Christmas when you don't have to go to work the next day.
So maybe some people have got the day off tomorrow.
We have DVRs now. I'm not. Okay.
Do you want to send a letter to the new Pope, Joe?
Obviously, I'm not devout enough a Christian to stay up all night for the boat, but anyway.
I like that you broke protocol and blessed a dog. Did you hear about that?
No,
that's cute.
There were all the bishops who gathered yesterday, and one of them is visually impaired, and he brought his dog along, and apparently he's supposed to only bless human beings and not dogs, and then when he came around, you know, he said he blessed the dog as well. And it was like a big breach of protocol, but everybody likes it because, you know, he's the Pope for the poor and all that. So
St. Francis of Assisi was the patron saint of animals.
Of animals, yeah.
So he's living up to his name.
Yes.
Go Pope.
I guess there's a lot of joy. Nope.
And you say go Pope, sorry.
I don't know.
I never thought I'd hear those words, go Pope.
On a Movie Wallahs episode.
I know, that was tangential. Sorry, okay. That was totally my fault. All right, well, let's get into our reviews. We have two movies to talk about today, the movie Stoker and the movie The Incredible Burt Wonderstone.
So I'll translate Stoker.
Well, people don't understand what I say when I say Stoker. They're going to say... So I tried to say Stoker because of my lack of American accent. So let's talk about Stoker. Stoker. Yes. Who's going to introduce this one? Yazdi, go ahead.
So Korean director Chan Wook Park has made quite a name for himself, most famously for the Korean Vengeance trilogy, which includes Old Boy, which is incidentally currently being remade by Spike Lee. Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance and Lady Vengeance. Those three movies are considered by many to be some of the best-made, most violent revenge flicks. Incidentally, the same director has also made the movie Three Extremes and, very surprisingly, written the script for a movie that's one of my favorites. It's a movie called I'm a Cyborg, But That's Okay. do check it out on Netflix. It's a cute movie. But here is his first foray into Hollywood with the English language film Stoker. Stoker tells the story of a young girl, India, who on her 18th birthday learns that her father has died in a car accident. Never close to her mom, things get even further complicated by the sudden appearance at the funeral of her father's younger brother, who she has never known existed. This uncle clearly has designs both on the girl as well as his mother. Who is he and what is he up to? Mia Wasikowska plays the girl India. Nicole Kidman plays her mom. And Matthew Good plays the uncle. The cast is rounded off by Jackie Weaver, Dermot Mulroney, and Alden Ehrenreich. The movie is written by Wentworth Miller. And to jog your memory, this is the same guy who was the lead actor in the Fox television series Prison Break. That's the guy who wrote this movie. Now, the three of us saw this movie together, and I'm really excited to hear what you thought about it. I've been actually waiting to discuss this for quite a while.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll go first then. So this film is an example of too much style over content. It's trying to be so clever that it forgot that it had to tell us a story too. But that said, I didn't hate this movie. I was actually more intrigued by it, and this may merit a second viewing to help me solidify my thoughts.
Joe?
So, I mean, reminding me that the director of this movie had his start in Korean cinema, where storytelling might be a little different, it was actually kind of a helpful thing, because up to this point, I agree totally with Rashmi. I mean, I'm all for stylish movies, and this was a very stylish movie. I mean, there's a deliberateness to every single shot. I mean, right from the end where the credits roll backwards to the precise composition of every single camera angle. This is so deliberate. But I think if you're going to be quirky, don't do it at expense of the narrative. And I feel like this movie really did take a back seat in terms of storytelling for this very visual experience. Not a bad movie, just really one that I had a bit of a hard time with.
So I fully agree with everything both of you have said, only my reaction is completely different. I loved it. So I will grant that this movie is kind of like an overripe fruit. I mean, I haven't seen a film this pulpy and morally muddled since Black Swan. I mean, Black Swan is the closest that comes to my mind when I think about the sensibility of this movie. And I will completely grant you the biggest problem with this movie is the plot. I mean, there's like 100 holes in the plot. I mean, the more you think about it, the more you realize how ridiculous it is on a scene-by-scene basis. None of that story should make sense. But, you know, there were a few things which really elevated this movie for me. And I think it's what you've said. It's the style of this movie. I mean, this is a person who understands the language of cinema. He really knows how to construct a shot. He really knows how to compose things in a shot. I mean, it was just such a treat for me that even though it kind of went overboard a few places, I was just like a kid in a candy shop, like just amazed at what I was seeing. And then the other thing which I really liked about the movie, I'm sorry, I'll stop in a minute, but the other thing which I really liked about the movie was that the violence here is really disturbing. I think this is the kind of violence that Quentin Tarantino should have gone after. You know, this violence really sickens, it kind of really bothers you. And I think if you're going to do very violent movies, this is how you should do it, where you don't clap at the violence, you're almost turned off by it. So I kind of appreciated that as well.
So I think to the violence, you said quite a few things there, Yazdi. The violence, I mean, I don't think it's comparable to a Tarantino. I think violence in a Tarantino movie is almost another character. Here, I think it was trying to tell us that the world we're watching is way more sinister than we think it is. Mm-hmm. But other than the narrative, the problem I had was the film was just too conscious of itself. It was trying to be so precious. And the problem I had the most was it felt like it was filmed in two different worlds. There was this kind of Brideshead Revisited Downton Abbey world, and then there was the real world, which was outside the gates of the home. And I understand that it's a way of telling a story, but it didn't work. It was like Alice and the Looking Glass. So I just didn't get that. And then the other thing for me was there were just too many threads that started at the beginning of the movie, and either they were red herrings and we were never supposed to follow them through, or there just wasn't time to finish the movie, or the other conclusion I came to was someone lost half the script, because that's how unfinished the film felt to me.
I mean, my reaction isn't quite as strong as that, but I think, half the script, you know, maybe not, but some key parts of it, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the feeling, the overall sense that I had about this movie was very similar to the way I felt when watching The Master.
Mm.
It was a film that kind of frustrated me in so many ways, because I really enjoyed the craft of movie making that I was seeing in front of me. And with The Master, I think it was kind of the masterclass on acting. This was kind of a masterclass on cinematography and visual composition. So really enjoyed that experience of the movie. But the characters I really found hard to care for. And I found myself kind of looking at the movie rather than being engaged and watching it. So again, it just a real struggle. narratively, again, I come back to that same, you know, the characters, you know, sometimes, Yazdi, I think you describe characters as being, you know, opaque. These weren't opaque, but they were definitely kind of translucent, as if they were smeared with Vaseline. So to the extent that you couldn't really understand or engage with them.
I fully agree with you. I'm not going to disagree that, you know, I wish this director had chosen a better script. And apparently the script has, you know, Hollywood has a list of the best unproduced scripts in Hollywood. There's a list of 100, and this movie had been, the script had been on it for a long time. So I don't know what happened in the translation. Maybe they decided to, you know, to make, take some liberties with the script, and that's how this movie landed up. But I was just so my reaction, I can see why, Joe, you think it was kind of like The Master, but The Master really bothered me. I mean, minute by minute, I was just getting frustrated because I was failing to understand what all this heavy-handed, all this indulgence, you know, what it led to. This one, actually, I could see some humor in it. I was kind of in a one, you know, I was kind of smiling along saying, oh, here we go, you know, this person is going to die now, and how are they going to die?
I'll give you that. It wasn't as frustrating, but it just felt the same, at the same level of disengagement, disconnection with it.
Yeah, and I wonder, you know, I think it was trying to be a clever horror, but it never felt scary enough for me. I sensed danger for some of the characters, but I never really felt scared, and I wish that there had been more commitment to either go all the way horror or, you know, psychological thriller, which is kind of where I think it got mixed up, or just a narrative about something strange going on.
I don't think it was going for horror. I think it was going for this psychosexual kind of disturbing kind of feel. And even then, I think it wasn't always successful, but I don't know. It felt like I enjoyed the ride. I really did. I mean, I thought the acting was really good, especially from Matthew Good. Matthew Good was so good. I mean, he's very good at playing these, you know, morally muddled, but you know, not concerned about it. I mean, he was so happy being not bound by any kind of moral strictures. You know, he was just doing what he wanted. It's hard to do that. And I think he was a good choice for that.
Yeah, no, brilliant acting by him. And Mia Wasikowska, the first thing I wrote down in my notes was, thank God we're seeing her in a current piece and not a period piece. But again, I would say, you know, modern day piece with, in inverted commas, once people see what the film is.
Right.
Very interesting. Anything else to say on this one? Or shall we wrap it up?
I don't know how much of a spoiler this is, but, you know, I kept trying to read too much into the title of the movie.
Mm.
And, you know, for me, the only thing Stoker represents is, you know, Bram Stoker's Dracula.
I was going to say that.
I thought it was more like stoking a fire.
Oh, see, that never came to me until you mentioned that.
Yeah, their name was Stoker, but the concept I got was like constantly stoking a fire to keep it going.
I got Bram Stoker as well, but I couldn't make the connection, so I dismissed it.
Maybe if anyone figures it out, write to us and tell us.
Yeah, and I also like that the Mia Wasikowska character was at all times this really confused person, and her behavior was never predictable. You know, she was always kind of behaving contrary to expectation or contrary to what was happening around her. And maybe it was just a bad script. And that's why she was behaving like that. But I want to give them some credit and say, I think they were deliberately trying to avoid that character, you know, to behave like how you might behave in a given situation. So that was interesting to me because she was just, you know, off the charts in terms of what she was doing.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting that she looked so childlike, yet she was supposed to be an 18, 19-year-old, which was very strange to me. But again, that kind of, I thought that was more about the style and her costume as opposed to anything else. So I didn't take too much away from that. But she was very good. I mean, she played this really well. And Nicole Kidman was bearable.
She was good in this. I liked her in this.
Yeah, she was good. She kind of played this loopy character she doesn't do very often.
Yeah.
And she was good.
She does it a lot.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think she does this kind of vacant, floozy woman a lot.
Rashmi just doesn't like her.
But I'm saying she was bearable in this movie.
I was just looking on Rotten Tomatoes, by the way, and we completely failed in our efforts to understand this movie because all the characters' last names were Stoker.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, that I got. Yeah, I got that.
The last name, yeah. Hence the movie name.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, but
no, but it's interesting. It's like calling a movie Smith.
Right, or Parker. You know, why not?
So there's something more than just their name. I guess
I'm a little too literal in my interpretations. Okay. Let's wrap this one up.
Okay, Joe, why don't you go first?
So, I mean, it's a visual treat, but I think it's a little too off-kilter for me to recommend this to anyone other than film school students. I think they should study and observe this one. I think there's a lot to learn here. I think especially if you are a fan of cinematography or looking to build a career in that. It's well-crafted, but ultimately lacked substance for me. So I'm going to give it a 5 out of 10.
Hmm. Yazdi.
So for me, the movie's pluses so much overweigh the minuses that I'm just amazed at, you know, visually, I mean, on a shot-by-shot basis, this movie is just such a treat to watch. Like I said before, this is somebody who really knows how to construct, you know, visual story. I mean, and granted, the actual plot doesn't do him justice, but... You know, it's such a delicious, you know, semi-rotten, kind of pulpy noir film that I embraced all of it. And I completely agree, this is not everybody's cup of tea. It was the perfect tea for me. It had the right proportion of everything. I really like this movie. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. And to me, even that seems a little bit stingy. But, it was a thrill for me. I wish more people made these kind of, you know, subversive, nasty, unpredictable, morally ambiguous movies. It kind of reminded me of Killer Joe a little bit, actually. But anyway.
Don't insult Killer Joe. Anyway, Stoker is an interesting film, but you'll have to be patient with it and maybe even watch it a second time to decide what's really going on or to decide if you like it. I didn't hate this movie. I'm still intrigued by it. I think for me, it's... Ugh. Somewhere between a 6 and a 7, probably a 6. 6 out of 10.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I think my 5 is a little stingy there, but I'm going to hold with it. Just frustrated me.
I want to watch it again.
And you know what? It frustrated me to the extent that I snoozed. I did a 30-second snooze in this one. Ooh. Rashmi didn't catch me this time because normally she catches me and she's like, wake up, wake up. She takes great pleasure in like waiting for that moment when my head just nods to give me a kick. So, like, I can often see her watching me in the corner of an eye. I managed to get away with it this time.
See, that's a testament to how much I was engrossed in the film.
Do you watch everyone? Are you watching me as well, Rashmi?
Always. I'm all watching.
It's like a game to her. She's like, I'm going to catch you sleeping, and I'm going to wake you up, and you're going to hate me for it.
Oh, my God. I'm not going to sit next to you, Rashmi. I don't want the pressure of being watched.
Because she's afraid you'll miss the movie. It's just that she can have the pleasure of waking you up and seeing you kind of in that miserable, like, whoa, what's going on? All right, moving on. But Wonderstone is our next movie. Rashmi, can you tell us all about the incredible Burt Wonderstone?
So when a street magician stunt begins to make their show look stale, superstar magicians Burt Wonderstone and Anton Marvelton look to salvage on their act and their friendship by staging their own daring stunt. This is directed by Don Scardino, and this has got a huge writing team. I'm not even going to attempt to name them all because there's ands and ands and ands.
And ampersands. So,
yes. But this stars a great cast, Steve Carell, Steve Buscemi, Olivia Wilde, Jim Carrey, James Gandolfini, Alan Arkin, Jay Moore, amongst others. So did this one pull it out of the hat for you, Yazdi?
So this movie is so... It's its own little piece of world, isn't it? I mean, I've been struggling to find one word to describe it, and the only word I come up with is square. This is such a square movie. You know what I mean? It's like almost, or maybe that's my take on it, but it just seems very deliberately blunted, square, geeky kind of movie, which loves, you know, it loves that it loves magic and it kind of sticks to it. And I kind of appreciated it for how square it was and how unambitious it was in many ways. And it kind of stuck to a very relatively simple story about, you know, this person kind of, Steve Carell's character going through his arc and becoming a better person. But
oh no, you gave it away.
Oh, I'm sure that's not a plot reveal for anyone, but I'm
joking.
But I'm not in love with this movie, but you know, I when I think of it, I have a smile on my face. And yeah, that's more than what I can say for other movies. Go on, Joe.
Yeah, I think the number of writers is a kind of a giveaway that this movie has suffered a little bit in production. And I think the vision of what they originally had in mind for the movie has gotten dulled over time as they've brought in additional writers to kind of, you know, bring it back into line to be more of a traditional Hollywood film, you know, have all of the various, you know, beats and plot points and ups and downs and acts structure. It's a very conventionally structured movie, classic story arc, nothing new here, but, and it's taken a beating in the press for it too. I mean, I think the reviews have been very bad for this one. And so I went in with low expectations, but, boy, did I have a good time with this. I mean, it has so much heart. It's done with a very good sense of fun. I think the cast is terrific. I love, Steve Carell in this, Olivia Wilde, Steve Buscemi. I think they, you know, the three of them did a really, really nice job of leading the cast. And, it felt like it was working so hard to entertain me that I couldn't help but be entertained. And I was. I enjoyed it.
This is incredibly predictable, hammy, and nothing we haven't seen before. But I loved this movie from start to finish. I thought it was sweet and endearing and really, really funny. And I noticed, Joe, that you and I were probably the two people in the whole cinema laughing way after everyone else had stopped laughing. And I could figure that out. So I really enjoyed this movie. And I can't believe that the hammering it's getting. Very sweet. Just very, very sweet. I mean, I like that it's a satire of magicians in Las Vegas. I think it was really smart to take the real people and make them caricatures and make them even bigger caricatures out of them. So, you know, we've got like the Siegfried and Roy and David Copperfield and Chris Angel and
David Blaine.
And, you know, it's really funny. It was really funny to me.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the three people, Olivia Wilde, Steve Buscemi and Steve Carell. I think the person who made this movie for me was Jim Carrey.
I forgot to mention him.
He's been kind of in a slump and this is the groove for him. This is the kind of role he needs to do. I mean, he was, every time he's on the screen, I mean, I didn't know whether I should, you know, be horrified or laugh or, you know, and he, you know, we are all doing improv and, you know, they talk about committing to a character. I mean, talk about committing. I mean, he really right. commits to this character, you know.
And it wasn't way over the top like Ace Ventura. It wasn't a crazy, I mean, it was crazy. It's always crazy when it's Jim Carrey, but it wasn't sickly over the top, which I liked.
Yeah. And he was totally going off on David Blaine and Chris Angel, but yeah, there was humor. I mean, the reason why I say it's such a square movie is because it's so unashamedly sentimental and I like that. And it's so unashamedly, there is no sharp edges to this movie. Everything right. is blunt and sweet and, you know, and nobody makes these kinds of movies anymore. And I can see this movie having come out in the 1940s easily, you know? So I admire it for having that sensibility, which, you know, these days everybody, all the humor is either, you know, very dark or very cynical or very extreme.
Or smutty and dirty.
Yeah, and it's none of those things, you know.
Right. And I think that's why maybe I enjoyed it so much, because the comedies we've seen recently, and we talked about it in the last podcast or the one before, 21 and over, every joke is at the expense of some sexual organ. I mean, in this movie, it was just sweet and cute and fluffy. And it was like so huggable. This film was so huggable. You know what I liked the most, though? All the men's wigs. Every man was wearing a wig, and I loved it.
Everybody was laughing at it. For me, it just seemed, that's the one part which didn't work for me. It just seemed so put on. I mean, their hair was so fake, you know.
But I loved that.
Right, right.
What I think surprised me more than anything was the humor in the movie. It really tickled me, and I think it was trying to be edgy in places, but all it did was come across as sweet. And, you know, even the Jim Carrey stuff where he's doing, you know, the Chris Angel, David Blaine type stuff where he's really doing some horrible things physically. Like he's, you know, sleeping at night on a, you know, instead of walking over hot coals, he made a bed out of hot coals and he's going to be this extreme magician. That whole sequence really tickled me. I don't know why I found it so funny, but his performance or something about it, it was almost like watching a cartoon. And I found myself giggling, but it wasn't kind of a chortle and it wasn't like a belly laugh. It was just a consistent giggle that lasted 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Rashmi probably saw that in the corner of her eye while she was trying to wake me up. No. I just found it so enjoyable.
I think that scene, and it's one of the better scenes in the movie, I think that scene works because of Carrie. Mm. Because he does this whole thing where he's like, okay, I'm falling asleep. And then he goes, ah! And then he goes, I'm falling asleep. I mean, I think it's all improvised. And you know, it's great. It's great, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so cute. There are just some really cute, endearing things about friendship. And it's got a great message. So yeah, I really love this. So Olivia Wilde was great. She's really impressing me these days. Lots of range. I mean, Alan Arkin, I wanted to hug him. How great to see Alan Arkin.
You know, when the first time you see Alan Arkin in the movie, it's, I think, in the very first scene of the movie.
Yeah.
I didn't recognize that. That was Alan Arkin. I'm like, this man looks so familiar. And I'm like, okay, this is going to kill me. You know, I need to find out who it is. And then, of course, you see him later in the movie and I'm like, oh, that's who he was. I think the movie, whoever's written the script or whoever's directed it, they have a genuine fondness for magic.
Yeah.
And not in like, oh, you know, wow me, kind of a geeky fondness for magic, you know, like they are into magic. Like I can see them literally coming to your house and, you know, pulling a penny behind your ear or something. I mean, so
not the kind of magic that kind of came and, you know, became all this extreme stuff that we see on TV, but the sort of thing that we saw growing up.
The wonderment.
Know? Yeah, there was a magician in the UK called Paul Daniels, and it was good, clean family entertainment. You know, that kind of magic, I think, is, you know, the illusion, the trickster, the if you know how it works, it isn't magic kind of magic. It's, you know, that was there all the way through. And a real love for that, you're right, Yazdi, was there throughout the whole film.
Yeah. And we have to say, we actually saw this film at Arclight, and they actually brought a magician on before the film started, which was really funny. And someone won a $50 gift card.
Really?
And Joe said, why didn't you pick me for that one?
I know, he made eye contact with me just before reaching behind somebody else's ear and pulling out a $50 gift card. I was like, rats.
Oh. I think it's because you cleaned your ears that morning.
This is true.
All right, let's wind this one up. So,
I mean, the one piece which did not work for me was the Steve Carell character. I think Steve Carell is one of the underappreciated actors right now in Hollywood. I really like him in every movie. But his character for the majority of the movie was so obnoxious. And I think maybe they were trying to go for the humor, but I never really bought his whole thing with Olivia Wilde. But again, that's a minor. I mean, he was so mean to her that his come around seemed, you know.
Genuine script problems. I mean, you know, let's not make out this movie was perfect because it had real. And I can see why a lot of people criticized it because it is kind of ham-fisted in places. What carried it for me was the sweetness, and so I forgave it all of its inadequacies, but, you know, I can see why people have knocked it.
Okay, Yazdi, give us your score.
Yeah, so you have a whole bunch of, you know, your family friends are visiting from out of town. They have kids who are, you know, 8, 9, 10, and you all want to sit down and watch a movie, and it's very hard to find a movie these days that all of you can watch or rent from Redbox. Here's that movie. I mean, this movie would be perfect. It's a family film. It's sweet. It's by no means the greatest movie ever made. But, you know, I like how geeky and nerdy and silly and sweet it is. Somewhere between a 6 and a 7 for me. I'm going to give it a 7.
Yay.
Rashmi mentioned the Arclight magician. And this guy, I mean, he came in and he was a little bit nervous. He was kind of sweaty. He was doing these, you know, bag of tricks type illusions all over the place, and in some ways this movie was just like him. You know, it was kind of like an older, sweet, but, you know, life hasn't treated him well enough, because he has had to come into an ArcLight movie theater to introduce a movie about magic, and he's not very good at what he does. He didn't really convince us, but he was so sweet and nice, and we all enjoyed it, and we all gave him a, you know, big round of applause, and it meant so much to him, it felt. And I think this movie was very much like that. I think it was potentially inept in places, but there was this underlying sweetness, this warmth to it, that made me really enjoy it in spite of itself, and for that it gets a 7 out of 10.
That's really sweet. This isn't incredible, but if you're open to it, it's really, really funny and you will have a magical time. I'm going to give this one an 8 out of 10.
Nice.
Yeah, it was just so much fun. And I think it helped. We watched it on a Friday night. It was the perfect Friday night movie.
And I think expectations were so low because I had seen the reviews. I had seen at least a couple of reviews saying, stay away from this one. It's a stinker. And I'm like, that's really unfair. I think it was much more fun than that.
I think most people are responding to the very uneven tone in the movie. I mean, it starts off really well. I love how it starts off, you know, when they're kids and so forth. And then it kind of, maybe it shows the hand of many script writers where it then it's trying to do different things for different, you know, different studio expectations. And maybe that's...
I think it was maybe about 7 minutes too long right at the end. I think we could have done without that last end scene, but it didn't spoil it for me.
Cool.
Okay.
Let's finish up for today. Mail at movierollers.com for comments. Twitter.com/movierollers. Facebook.com/movierollers 2 for updates, movie news, and find out what's going on with your favorite 3 movie reviewers. Until our next episode, it's Too Many Movies, Too Little Time. Good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.